Welcome. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us, whether it's live or later unrecorded. My name is Dr. Estelle Romanelli.
Natalie Romanelli.
And we run Own Your Shits. And we are happy to be here launching our first session in our lab called Relational Aid, Whatever Works. And what we're basically doing here, we live in Israel. And as you know, it's wartime here. And a lot of couples are under a lot of distress. And once I re-enlisted the army, then I got out and then realized that our contribution is to actually help the home front. So we opened up a relational war room in Hebrew. We've been helping couples with seminars and workshops for free. And now we're doing our first one in English. This is aimed for any English-speaking couples and Hebrew-speaking couples that understand English. And talking to cutting-edge leading therapists and authors who inspire us and to give us some of our wisdom. And what we're going to be doing, so we're very, very happy to have Margaret Connell here, which I'll introduce in a second. And the format for tonight is going to be straight up. I'm going to introduce him. We're going to talk a little bit about today's topic, which is multiplicity, which Mark will explain in a second. And then we're just going to demo on us, real stories. He's going to just basically work with us and teach us or demonstrate through us.
We could see the model in action applied on us, and then you can take it home and apply it on yourselves.
Right, something practical that you can take home. And then we'll have some time for questions and answers. So without any further ado, let me introduce our guest today. Mark O'Connell is a psychotherapist and clinical supervisor in New York City. He's the author of the books, The Performing Arts of Therapy, Acting Insights and Techniques for Clinicians, and Modern Brides in Modern Rooms. His articles on the performing art of living, published in various clinical journals and popular sources, and he teaches workshops for therapists on using the most essential instruments ourselves. I want to say something on a personal note. My doctorate's in improv and therapy, so anything that's connected to improvisation and therapy and acting, and then I have to stumble across this book, which I read in 2 seconds. It's a wonderful book. And I want to say something about the war. I mean, aside from it being horrible, it really changed my whole life and things that I never thought was possible happening. And one of them is talking to you, Mark. And I just think I can't imagine a different context that this would happen like this. And I really, really want to thank you so much for donating your time and volunteering to come here with us. So really, really touched by that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I'm really very, very, very glad and humbled to be here with you. So thank you.
So Mark, there's so many things we could talk about tonight. You have such a rich teaching of Torah, as we say in Hebrew. Well, I really thought this a concept of multiplicity, of multiple selves. Just can you give us a little bit of brief, what is that? Why is that relevant for couples now in times of trauma and distress?
Yeah, you know, where I would start with that is to say I haven't met anyone in my therapy practice, which goes, for a while, over a decade at least, and who doesn't want the same thing. Everybody wants the same thing. Every couple wants the same thing. At least that's how I approach my work, which is recognition.
Yep.
Motivates every person who is that I'm working with, even when they're behaving badly, even when they're alienating their partner, is recognition. What they are up to, whether they know it or not, is seeking that recognition of who they truly are. And who we truly are is where multiplicity comes in. There's our everyday selves that we've learned. I think of us as pianos. I think that's an easy way to think about it. So you've learned because of your context, how you grew up in terms of safety, in terms of where you grew up, culture, et cetera, you learn to play just a few of these keys, and that's your everyday self. And that's what the world knows for the most part. But you have this whole instrument of potential keys to play that are authentic. It's just the circumstances maybe haven't, provided you that opportunity to play them. And so that's all of us. And so when we talk about recognition, we're talking about the experience, first of all, of being allowed to find those keys. So being allowed to be in a process where we are not being judged by just the few keys we're playing, we're being looked at with this kind of loving curiosity about like, what else is in there? Or at least what is maybe underneath, this particular way that you're playing the keys currently. And when we're in crisis, I've never been in my homeland has never been at war. So I don't know what that is. So I'm coming from ignorance when we're talking about war, but I do work with a lot of couples who are in crisis, who I will specify by saying whose nervous systems are so activated when they're trying to talk to each other that you don't have perspective, and you don't have perspective on that multiplicity of self. And so when you're in that state, if you think of the piano, you play one key, maybe high pitched, repetitively. And that's maybe all you're able to play, because you're still up to the same thing. You're still begging for recognition in those moments. It's just more desperate. And at that moment, you're really begging to be regulated and asking for regulation. So multiplicity, why that's important to think of in those moments is we can be shut down by each other in those moments. We can alienate each other. We can be very destructive at those times, and very, very fearful that we're going away from each other, that we're abandoning each other. And so more than ever in a relationship of any kind, in those moments, we have to first and foremost remember that what both of us are up to is recognition. So if you take nothing else away, when you are in those moments of crisis, when you know it's up to here, the anxiety, the nerves, I have not experienced a war on my homeland before, so I'm speaking from ignorance with regard to war and that experience. But my the experience I do have is many years of working with couples who are in a state of crisis and who basically what in simple terms we're talking about the body being in a state of fight or flight and the nervous system being overly activated. And it being very, if not impossible, at least challenging to have any kind of perspective when engaging in a relationship. And yet, as both of you have pointed out so clearly and beautifully, that you know our primary relationships are everything. That's our main lifeline, really always. And so we actually need to figure out how to relate, even when we're in those states of fight or flight. And so that's really, I think, our question tonight. Where does multiplicity fit into this? I think it's really significant, crucial really, to remember in those times that we are many things. And I was saying before, we are like pianos, human beings. We have so many keys on our instrument, but we've learned to only play a few of them in our everyday lives. And certainly in times of crisis, we learn to play, you know, we have to necessarily just pay maybe one of them and in a very unpleasant way. And that doesn't mean that that's the sum of who we are. And so that's really hard to remember in those moments when we're being really awful or, you know, it's seemingly awful to people around us, when we're alienating the very people we need for our survival. And I want to just give you a quick example that's not from war, that's from me here taking my kid, my five-year-old, to school and him complaining that he doesn't want to wear a hat. We're arguing, whatever. He runs into the street. Ooh. I scream, right? And I scream loud. So people are already witnessing us kind of like arguing a little bit, and then I scream. So many things are happening in that moment. He listened. I'm obviously terrified he's going to die, get hit by a car, or at least injured. I'm still a little bit angry as well because we're fighting about the hat. We both feel ashamed because this has been witnessed and to a certain extent kind of shut down and kind of both of us sort of being angry with ourselves and with each other in this moment, in this one moment. But this is where multiplicity, it really is again, crucial to think about. This is one key that was necessary to play in that one moment. Did I do it perfectly? Who knows what perfect is in these moments? No, I didn't. But that was what the moment needed. And so then our job is to think about in that relationship, my job as the parent is to think about, okay, how do I remember that this isn't the sum of who I am? How do I let him know that we're going to revisit this when we've both calmed down? So this is, if you take nothing else away, this is one of those things to take away. One thing you can always do is create some kind of lifeline in those moments, some kind of indication that we can't talk about this now because we're just too activated, but we will. I'm not leaving you. My priority is to come back to this and to make us both understand what happened so we can love each other better, understand each other better. So I had to find a way to, he's five, so I don't know how much he understood, but to let him know that as he goes through his day that we're going to revisit this. We're gonna process it when the iron's cold, as they say. And that's exactly what we did. And I mean, who knows? You do your best. And that's just it. You do your best. You can't, you invite. I want you to remember the word invite. We're always inviting people. We're inviting people to see us, and we're inviting them to show us who they are.
So
yeah, wait, please.
Wait, I always jump in. I love it. I love this idea that we are pianos and that we kind of get into this, like, you know, we know to play. I mean, I'm not a musician and I don't know a lot, but like, let's say I know how to play chopsticks. So that's then what I play. And that's what I play, you know, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And there's so much more, right? There's so many more options and
one possibilities.
Exactly. And one of the things that we try to work with in the clinic with couples is to always expand, right? It's the idea of expanding possibilities and expanding reactions and expanding, you know, the way that we interact. And so I'm loving this piano and I really want to take it away with me. How do I remember that I have more keys, especially if I've never played another tune, right? I definitely want to play another tune. I know that, you know, I'll share that I found that I was in this rut recently, just over the last 2 weeks, like, you know, with the war and the kids weren't in school and like there was a lot of stress and we're trying to kind of keep the business going, but the kids are home and there were sirens. And I realized that my son and I were just in this constant negative loop, right? We were just playing the same notes, the same keys. How do I find new keys?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's interesting. You said the word remember. That just stuck in my mind. We don't necessarily remember because it hasn't happened yet sometimes.
Right.
So it's an act of faith I think that the first thing that we always need to remember is that there's nothing more important than recognition. So we're going to seeing and being seen, hearing and being heard. That's it. If the world is blowing up, this is how I approach everything anyway, my work. And if the asteroid's coming and we're like, this is over, recognition from another human being is still important. It's still priority in that moment. So if we're working from that premise, then even in a moment like you're describing, which is, I mean, it's impossible, isn't it? All those things at the same time. I can't even, you know, it's too much. The first thing, all you have to first remember is, okay, so what is the priority? The priority is, it doesn't have to happen in this moment, but my goal is for the two of us to see and hear each other.
I love that.
I know that that's my goal. The next part is I can take as long as I need to figure out how we're going to do that. At some point, we're going to revisit it. And the other thing that goes along with that is letting the other person know that's the intention. And the image I have for that to remember is that even if, and you find anything, I always imagine like a gentle touch to the shoulder, but that's not always possible given the state you're in. But that idea, that image, but the image of, that I think of when it's in order to indicate that we're not there yet and we need some time to regulate ourselves to figure things out before we can connect is someone who needs to go underwater and they're like, I just need to go underwater. Maybe they're part mer creature, whatever. They need to go underwater, but you just need to raise your hand and let the lifeguard know that's it. Or just let the people on shore know. Just let them know I'm here and I'm coming back. It is so crucial because one of the things that we're all afraid of when it comes to the shame, like I was saying about me and my son, is this feeling that, oh, now I messed up forever.
Right.
Because that person's going away from me. And so this is how those two things can go together. You take as long as you need, but you just let the person know in some form, we're going to get there. But right now I need to scream. Right now, I need to go away for a second. Right now, I'm going to be a little bit. I'm telling you right now, I'm a little angry. I know I'm a little angry. So I'm a little angry. I'm a little keyed up, more so than usual. We get like that sometimes, you know. We'll revisit that when we can. Is that
yes,
at all helpful?
I love everything about that.
I want to bring this. Some people join us a little bit late. So basically, we're talking right now, 75 days, couples have been in survival mode. Some of us have been even, you know, half of us been maybe, you know, in the army. And right now we're hanging on threads. We're in survival mode. We don't really have prefrontal cortex functioning, right? Because we're also tense and there's economic crisis and all that. And right now, the multiplicity is the key, which basically means to extend the narrow bridge that we have left right now. Because I'm saying this back in simple language to make sure that we can. So basically, multiplicity is widening that bridge between us right now, even though it might be scary outside, but inside, so we have a wider repertoire, so we can support each other more. Is that what? Can you bring that down to couples that are listening to us now?
I love how you said that. You know, I was actually just working with a couple last night who's there's a history of history of trauma and physical trauma, and for one of them in particular, and this person had the best description of what it's like sometimes when we're activating each other and unable to connect. They said sometimes it's like we're children with adult weapons, and right, because that's when you think about multiplicity. So that's what we have to keep in mind. So one person may be behaving in a way that's just sort of like, who the heck are you? Why are you treating me like you're commanding me to do things? You're just being an a-hole. Who the heck are you? And how do you, it seems like they want the opposite of recognition and connection. But actually that's exactly what they want. It's just that so we have to hold on to the idea that I'm a child inside here behaving this way, trying to regulate myself, first of all. I just don't even realize that I'm actually asking that other person to regulate me. But I'm doing that so that I can invite recognition. That's really, that's the premise I work from. And I've been doing it for a long time. And this is from learning about people. I just haven't met anyone where that's not the case, that underneath it all, we want to be recognized, and we're just oftentimes asking the other person to regulate us. So if you keep that in mind, then you can tell the person as best you can, I'm not good right now. I'm not good. And I need to go regulate myself, basically, in your own simple way. That's the first task. And that's perfectly legit. You know, you go away to regulate yourself so that you can come back. You just let them know, I planned on coming back. So the thing that's hard to work on when, like you said, there's no prefrontal cortex functioning, it's a practice of very simply indicating that you're coming back.
I love that. And that, Mark, the aspect of recognition and also kind of letting the person know, okay, I need a break because I need to, in a way, what you're saying is we first need to recognize ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. I need to recognize what's going on with me before I can even attempt to recognize where you're at. And so I need a moment. That's right. And then I guess my next question is when I'm kind of going through this process of recognizing myself, mm-hmm. how can I begin to play more?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I want to say is, because since we're talking about sort of like imminent sort of like danger, crisis, that sort of state of being, when we may not have the opportunity to go away in the most ideal way of sort of regulating ourselves. So I do want to speak to that first. And I want to just, the way we think about it can be helpful on its own. So first and foremost, so that once you've said, I need to regulate myself to yourself and to the other person, that's already, you've already begun the process of seeing and being seen and hearing and being heard. So there's no there. That is the there. You've actually already begun entering that process. And so that I want you to take with everybody to take with you is if you know that is everything, that you're already in the process. So you don't want to feel like, oh, I haven't done it yet. Yes, you have. You've already, you recognize that you both have this incredible need to take care of yourselves first. So then how do you go about it? It's breathing. It always involves breathing. It always involves breathing and asking yourself the question, where am I? And The first place you need to access that we block off is vulnerability, worry, doubt, the discouraging feeling, all the feelings that we're protecting, fear. This is the hardest thing in the world because we are locking our bodies with tension, our rib cages, everything, making our breathing shallow because we don't want to look at that because it feels dangerous to look at that. It's the hardest thing in the world, and yet it's the only way to empower ourselves. It's actually empowering to breathe into that feeling of doubt and worry and fear. And so that is tricky. It's a practice, but I will say the simple words are to remember it's breathing, vulnerability, and power. That's the power. Another good word to think of is just grounding. You're grounding, you're automatic. You know what, when I do that for myself, I'll say, because I get very, very tense and very, very anxious about things. When I like speak to the, when I name the things I'm actually afraid of, which are kind of inexplicable, aren't they? The things that are in our bodies. You know, there's just so much is just living in the body every day. But when I unlock my tension and let it turn into energy, because it is energy. It's energy that we're, so you don't want to think about just sort of eliminating it. You want to use it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I even let a sigh out to let, you know, to say, oh, gosh, I'm afraid of like not doing enough today, or I'm afraid of letting everybody down. And I'll even try to give voice to it. I'll even, I'm an actor. So it's like I like to play all the different keys, you know, but I think it can be helpful to think like an actor, actually, and just to indulge in all these different versions of being human that are living in us, but beginning with that really raw, vulnerable one. I also, sorry, but I have to recommend this. If you just go to YouTube and see Viola Davis's Oscar clip from the movie Fences, because it is all in that clip, because she is in this scene where, you know, it's in her voice. She's doing exactly what I'm saying. She's breathing into her greatest fear and her feeling of most insignificance. And then it unleashes this demand to be seen by her husband.
Wow.
And it's all in the sound of her voice. It's in the breathing. It's all, and that's really what we're asking of ourselves. And I encourage you to look at it so that you can see how empowering it is, and how it's ultimately about that invitation to be recognized. So by recognizing your vulnerability, you are beginning this really generous step of inviting your partner to see you and to see themselves as well. It's an invitation. So as you breathe into vulnerability, you are in beginning the process of inviting your partner to see you better.
So I want to pivot now in a second. So people, if you have any questions, please write in the chat. But what we're going to be pivoting now is taking these ideas.
This is so great because we have such a good.
Yeah.
We have such a good topic.
Okay. So we asked Mark ahead of time. He said, hey, okay, let's bring this amazing idea down to the ground, to the muscle. To couples that are watching this, and I'm sure there are a lot of therapists here who work with couples. And what I'm going to say is, as we're doing this, feel free to write in the chat questions, thoughts, and we will afterwards have some time for Q&A. I think what I'm taking, if I have to big chunk this down to the bottom line, is there's always more of me than I can break this relationship. And what I want part of me is taking over everything, whether it's my sad, depressed, angry. Multiplicity is basically saying I have more. I want to bring more. Can that be?
Absolutely.
All right. So Mark, you want to, let's do it. Let's jump in it. Can Mark?
You're so brave.
So give us what's the exercise or what's the intervention?
Well, the exercise I like to do.
Perfect. The topic of recognition is perfect.
Thanks to leader.
I love it. I love it. I'm a little nervous. I want you to like me. We've only just met.
Don't worry. We love being stretched and challenged. And
right. The exercise that we're gonna most of my couples find it to be rather engaging. It involves looking at a conflict that already took place, and kind of stopping and starting it as if it's a movie, and looking at when you slow it down like that, you can see the subtext. You stop and think about the subtext in each person's eyes. And we think about the multiple interpretations of each moment. So that's why I chose that one for this idea of multiplicity.
Okay, we're ready.
So we have about 15 minutes for the demo.
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
Not wasting time.
Okay, so do you want us to share the conflict?
Tell me, show me.
Okay.
Make it ugly.
Okay, great. You can just jump in and push me. So the other night, we finally finished our day, got the kids to bed, finished, you know, everything that we had to do. And our kind of evening ritual is that we meet on the sofa for some time, just the two of us. And it's whether it's kind of checking in or winding down or watching a series or all of the above. And I came in and I saw that Asa'el was on his phone. So I asked him if he needed some time. He said that he did. I said, great. I picked up my phone, assuming that when he was finished with whatever it was he was doing, he would tell me so that then we could have an evening together. Okay, about 10, 15 minutes go by. I see he still hasn't said anything. After about 20, 25 minutes, I turn to him and I'm like, okay, are we going to have an evening together? Or like, are we each just on our phone? Like what? And he was like, oh, well, I saw that you didn't put the phone down. So I just moved on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing on my phone. Now, needless to say, right, there's like a history of like phone issues and stuff like that between us. And I think I lost it. Did I lose it? I think I lost it. And I got very angry and upset. And I said, you know, I asked you how much time you needed. We've talked many times about kind of like time spent together in the evening. You didn't indicate a specific time. I assumed that you would stay when you're done so that we could move on to the next thing rather than kind of me, I don't know, guessing when you're done. So that was, do you want to jump in and share from your perspective?
I'm waiting for Mark to do something here.
Okay. I have questions though. So what felt like the greatest offense that he hadn't told you ahead of time? That...
Great question. I'll tell you what the greatest offense in my mind was. For me, the greatest offense was that this has been kind of a recurring complaint of Asa'el that I am on my phone and he hates kind of waiting for me to finish up and that I'm very distracted by the phone and that, you know, he feels like, I don't know, you feel like you have to compete with the phone, especially in the evening. But then here was a situation where I kind of felt gaslit, to be completely honest, because I felt like I was very clear as to like, how much time do you need? Whatever the answer is, that's fine. Let's just clearly communicate it. And then it was this kind of like, I'm waiting for you, even though he was still on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like he said to you, I'm waiting for you.
No, he didn't even say that. When I put the phone down. And I was like, what's going on? Like, are we having an evening together? Like, what's happening? Only then was he like, oh, well, I was waiting for you. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm not explaining.
I said, tell me when you're done. And then I went back to my phone and I never got back to
him. He never, as though.
But in my mouth, I'm like, I'm waiting for you, Galit, but I'm actually still on my phone.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, great. So that's a great example of you know, if we stop and start and look at the movie, that the line is one thing, the subtext is something entirely different. Like, I'm waiting for you, that's what the line is, but you were playing something else. What were you playing? What was happening in your mind? What was your action, Asa'el? What were you actually doing?
You didn't even say that you were.
I think my 1 second. Can I please work with Mark? This is my turn.
This is good. This is what I want more of.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, I have this narrative that I'm competing against Galit's phone. So I have this little victim-y, violin-y kind of move.
And I just want to say, like, it's a massive narrative. It's been years. He's got the kids in on it. And, like, the truth is, Mark, that it's not true. It's just not true. Talk about recognition. Like, I feel like nobody recognizes that actually many times I put the phone down or I, like, am very clear as to, like, What time? Just tell me what time. What time are we meeting? What time are we not? Or
yeah,
that's
yeah. So okay. So your experience of how you're managing the phone is very, very, very different of how he's describing it. Yeah. So what is your complaint about Galit and the phone use?
I think for me, that specific event is like, I want her to put a phone down and wait for me, and then
He wants me to wait for him. He wants me to sit and stare.
The second it's here on the phone, while I'm shooting the phone, I'll go back on the phone.
He wants me to sit and stare and wait until he's done with whatever.
Why? What's the significance of her waiting?
I want to feel like I want all of her attention. And the second she's on her phone, there's a part of me that feels like she's not with me. I feel like, again, as you say this, I realize there's a part like a child in me saying, hey, I want all eyes on me.
What does it feel like when she looks like, what is the experience of her not giving you all of that attention?
That I'm invisible.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm worthless, that I'm not interesting, that I'm not, that I'm invisible. And that's the word that comes up.
And Gelly, because I want to think about what's building to this getting, you know, this explosion. What specifically was making you angry? So he's just explained to us that he was feeling, not seen, invisible, actually. But what was your interpretation of it? Clearly, you must have thought he was being a very different character than that.
Well, that's a really good question. I hope that, because I can feel it in the body. The word that came up is two-faced.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like he, almost as though the playlist the constant playlist is one thing, but actually the actions are very different. And so the constant playlist is like, put the phone down, I want to spend time with you. Put the phone down, I want to spend time with you. But here was, you know, here was an example of where I was, he kind of like turned the table on me all of a sudden, right? Where I asked, you know, to get kind of clarity. I'm not triggered by him being on his phone. I don't have the same button of, I don't feel invisible. Like, I get it. So in a way, kind of, I can respect it. And I recognize, you know, that sometimes you need to finish things up on your phone. Our phones are, you know, our kind of working device. There's so many things, right? They're also our working device. We also sometimes use them to unwind. They're kind of like pacifiers and things like that. And so I felt like I had made space for that. And then this is a bit extreme, but that night, I think I almost felt like betrayed. Because then
I'm feeling it more. I'm getting it more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the history. Yeah.
I asked, he had said something, you know, saying like, I need 15 minutes, but then there was no indication that he was done and he just moved on to the next thing.
Yeah. 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 So you felt a little manipulated by this.
Yeah.
What is this? Cause like, I thought I was with you. I'm like, if I'm dropping into like your character, your position here, you're like, I thought I was with you because I have been trying to use the phone less. Like, I was taking you at your word that the phone bothers you in this way. But wait a minute, what's this?
Yeah.
In fact, so if you don't really care about the use of the phone, then it must really be about you needing to control and to control me and to do things the way you want to do things. Wow. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that fireworks just went off on your screen.
You were so spot on, Mark. It just
right.
Yeah, you're 100% feeling me.
But here we go, and that's really great because now when I say it that way and based on how you describe the scene, that seems to be what his character is like. He's just sitting there like the king. And he's just like, you know, it's contradictions. It's just, but ultimately it's just about, I'm going to do what I want. It's arbitrary, but I'm in control here. And I get to sit here and be on my phone. But this is the children with adult weapons, right? Because what you've said, Asael, was that on the inside, really, what you're really navigating is this sense of, I think, or you correct me if I'm wrong, this sense of like, I just need her full attention. Otherwise, I feel like we're not really here together.
And then I realized that if she's not giving it to me, that I don't need anyone else. I'll just keep going on my phone. It's okay. Like the little insulted child that says, well, never mind.
But it's funny when you say that, Mark, because I feel like that was kind of an added insult to injury from my perspective, because we had talked about these things and because I know that he can be vulnerable and because I know that he can, I know that there's another character in there that can say, I, I, I just want your attention right now, or I just need a hug right now, or I just, like, he knows, I know that there are other keys.
And but at that moment,
I would like, what?
Why, Asel, why weren't you playing it in that moment? What was getting in the way?
I think at the end of the day, I didn't have multiplicity there. I think that part of me that wanted to, and the mouth said, I want more time, but if she's not on her, I'm not going to put my phone down first. She needs to put it down first, and she needs to wait for me, and I need to feel like she loves me and she's into me. And I think, and then I'm broadcasting live. I'm just trying to connect this also to the theme.
Yeah.
Because I'm also conscious of the time. So I think for me, what's coming up is I didn't have more parts there.
Yeah.
And didn't.
Yeah. Well, so with the example I was giving before about like with breathing and regulating yourself, so that would be an example of if you were to take a moment then, let's say, to breathe and see what was what's going on with you and the most vulnerable side of you, what would that feel like? The part of you that's just sort of like, I'm not really capable of forging this connection right now. She has to do that. She has to do the forging. What is that feeling? What is that sense that she would have to be the one to reach out to you?
If I was vulnerable, I would give the emotional bit clean and clear. Is that what your question is?
Yeah.
I want you to love me. I want you to just, I don't know, caress me and just be with me.
Yeah, but why couldn't you ask for that? Why couldn't you say that?
Yeah, that's my question.
I think it's hard for me sometimes to ask for that. It's not, it's something I do indeed in our marriage, but it's not, doesn't come naturally to me.
Yeah, that's really what I'm talking about. That's the, if you were alone with yourself and you really let your attention like turn into just sort of like a more vulnerable, chilly kind of energy, like the most chilly version of that energy, the most vulnerable, like where you're kind of shaking. That's what I would ask you to try to get in touch with when you're like with your alone with yourself. Like, what is that sense? Because we all have these different inexplicable senses of just like, you know, relationships are complicated that way. Who's leading? Who's initiating this or that? Like we, you know, even after many years, like one person still, you know, we fall into these patterns. And so, but it's interesting to just to know, not with any judgment, just to know about yourself. What is that part of me that's just like in certain moments just doesn't want to reach? What does it cost me to reach? And there's no easy answer to that, but that's what I would leave you with as a guide, like a guiding question for yourself is sort of like, why can't I in those moments sometimes just say, you know what? I'm separating from the phone. My invitation is going to come from this place of aloneness. She might even say no. She might even say, I'm ready to go to bed actually. And I'm still going to ask anyway. Like, that's what I would encourage you to find. Who am I? Why am I getting so bold?
Everything's bold.
And I have to think that it also connected with me with something that you had said earlier in our private Zoom, which was the kind of, you talked about the difference between being judged versus being looked at. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I feel like part of the role that I was playing or part of what was coming, I don't know if it's the role I was playing or the key that I had, or I was kind of like, how dare he judge me? Like, couldn't he, if he's doing what he always criticized me for doing, can't he look at himself instead of judge me?
Yeah. He was externalizing.
You know what I mean?
And I do.
And I want to ask you, and then please sum it up, Mark, because we're in this. You could go like this for hours. I think you heard another aspect of me or another voice in me or another part of me. Does that?
Well, I think what stayed with me the most and what really resonated with me, because I feel like I know that feeling now, particularly now, so well, because of kind of the war and how these times have really kind of reverted us back to like regress to those keys, you know, to those very limited, narrow keys that we know so well. Was that when you said that, like, you just, or Mark, when you asked, like, why couldn't you step out of yourself to, like, to bring, you know, the vulnerable sides that you know how to bring, and you were just like, I just couldn't, I didn't have the strength to do it, to tap into those keys. And that's actually what, because I so know that feeling. Like, I know that feeling that if it were any other time, you would be able to do that. But at the moment, like, the energy resources are just so limited that we just don't have we don't have it every time.
And we don't. That's actually a really good example. This is a really good example for everyone because we don't have it. We don't have it every time, but it is really, really key to remember just how important it is to practice. It's a practice looking at ourselves so that we can make that clear invitation and to note that we all do it. This is what I want you to notice. We all do it all the time. When just note when you're asking the other person to regulate you.
Wow.
Just note it because we do it so often. I only am aware of it because just from years of being a therapist and then also 5 years of being a parent, it's just like I'm just so aware when someone's, demanding that I regulate them. But it's just worth that practice of wait a minute, why does that other person have to make that first move? Why can't I say, in other words, why can't I say I'm angry about something and then move on to my question for them or invite them in something? So often we just compound the two things because we're asking the person to regulate the emotion. I want to give you just like a quick example. That somebody gave me just recently, this person in a couple of session was saying, I want to know why you think everything is inequitable in this. And so I stopped them. And it's just a perfect example of like with film acting, because I was like, the line is sounds like an open-ended question, but the delivery is not at all. The delivery is saying, I'm furious about this. Get rid of my fury. Relieve me of my fury. How dare you? What's wrong with you? This is this doesn't make any sense. And so I had to help the person and person parse out that there's anger and a disagreement, and so they're angry because they disagree. But there's also a question, and when you parse them out, the delivery of the question, the affect of the delivery can be now you're free to really, really say why was that hard for you. Because you haven't let go of the other part. And by the way, now that I go into the other beat, I'm a little pissed off because like you've given me nothing to go on. It doesn't make sense to me. It's not how I grew up. But if you split them up, that's what when I say regulation in the breathing and stuff, it helps you to parse out those things. Yeah.
And I love that because essentially there's room for both, but let's just be. Like, let's be clean about it. Let's be clean about where the anger is and make space for that and have that come out kind of in a clear way and have, like the script match the tone, match the delivery, match the, right? And the other one. And then the question match curiosity and like, I love
otherwise,
that.
Otherwise, what you were doing is you were asking the person to sort of break it down like in a science lab and sort of distill like, oh, I guess there's a lot going on here. There's this and this and this and this and this. And really, they're not going to do that. They're just going to get shut down.
Right. Oh, I love that.
So as we're kind of reaching the last part, I'm inviting whoever's listening and watching, please feel free to ask or reflect. So Mark, can you kind of sum up this part of like, because I feel like I'm too much in it to be also cognitive and connected to multiplicity. So could you kind of bring it together and how this demo brings that in?
Yeah. When we attempted to break it down into the moments, we were thinking about how each moment was being interpreted. Just tell me when you're ready and you're looking at the phone. It's looking at the way, so Galit had interpreted your unwillingness to sort of step up and say I'm done. She interpreted it a certain way, and so she believes that the intention at that point, the way she receives it anyway, is to control. So when we stop and ask questions about what were you actually doing there, then we can appreciate. Oh, wait a minute, I see. And Galit, I guess in an ideal world, if we had more time, like I would help you with breathing and stuff too. And you would get to the point where you'd say, I see 1,000%. oh, you were feeling abandoned by me. Let's try to find out why. So then we, that's not an ending. Think of beginnings and not endings. So then we ask lots of questions about why. And then at the same time, Asel, you have to do the same thing for her and say, I can understand. That's not at all where I was coming from, but I understand. You must have felt so manipulated. I must have seemed like, you know, this Machiavellian sort of like lazy king character who just like could just change his mind about things and do whatever he wants. I understand. Uh-huh. That's so infuriating. And when you break it down like that, the stop and start, I also think of it like if you watch a tennis match, there's the what's going on in the court. And then there's like the dispassionate people in the booth saying like, oh, and then when you see the ball, actually, when you slow it down, when here, you're being both. You get to get in the booth and be like, oh, I see the moves. And then appreciate. So that's how I think of the demo in terms of the multiplicity.
Wow.
I love it. This has been so eye-opening.
Yes.
And I think there's something very accessible in saying, you know, this is the character that I'm experiencing you as. And I know that there are other characters because I've seen them. So what's going on? Like, why am I getting this dude?
Oh, that's great. That's a great takeaway. That's really useful. I'm glad you put it that way. That's usable for people, I think.
I think for me, you know, this demo really brought, like, I know here that I have lots of different self states, different parts. But now in the war right now, I have my bandwidth is very narrow.
Yeah.
And in those moments, especially moments of conflict or tension, to first ask myself, like you said, like, okay, what other parts are not coming out? And to know that at any given moment, there's more than one part in me acting right now. There's more than one part. And I think what maybe if I'm going back to this theme of multiplicity is really remembering I have a lot of different parts of myself. I have a lot of different parts. And I feel, I, you know, this goes back to when the lead asks us, why didn't you do it? And I think for me to be vulnerable right now is an effort. I mean, it's an effort pre-war. Certainly now in war days, my default is just to, you know, clamp up and to really open up and emotionally undress. I just realized that it's so, so difficult.
I love that. Wow. And see, and that's just it. You just invited her to see you because, you know, sometimes we think, oh, it's about doing it perfectly or doing the perfect. It's not. It's just about, it's about allowing each of us to see what is and then keeping in mind what can be, but allowing a process, allowing you to be in process. So if you're saying, I can't do it right now for all of these reasons, that's where you are. And that's what needs to be recognized. And that's what you just did, which is so incredible because that's actually where you are in this moment. I'm so glad actually that it's so important to kind of push back when these questions aren't about, you know, my line of questioning isn't about sort of like leading you to the right way to be. There's no right way to be. There's only where you are, where you're capable of being right now and keeping in mind where you can be and where you'd like to be and asking the other person to see all of that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, seeing what is and keeping in mind what can be. Wow. Thank you.
Wow. This was so much. And phenomenal. And for all the people that joined, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do we have time for like a couple of questions if anybody has?
Mark, do we have another couple minutes with you? Or
yeah, we do. We have a couple of minutes.
If anybody wants to ask a question, open a mic, let me know. And I want to apologize again for the wrong link. That's on me.
It's okay.
I'm feeling, there's a part of me that's feeling guilty. I'm naming it. If anybody wants to ask something, and if not, we'll do our closing thoughts.
Yeah, let's do it. I've scribbled out so many notes. I've taken down so many notes because this was just so wonderful. And so I also have to share that I love that you use kind of like the energy. I could really feel it. I could feel you feeling me. You know, like we had this moment where we were like, I get it. Now and it was like, wow, I felt seen. Mm-hmm. I really felt like you recognized it and me and it's so powerful. And thank you so much. This was a true, true gift, really.
Wow. Mark, what, you know, when this is an opportunity for you to sum it up or whatever, something you're taking away or a thought you have coming into this, or for people listening right now who are trying to reach and hold their multiplicity. Because this is what I'm realizing. Right now, we're in a binary reality right now. Good, bad, good, evil, war.
Life, death.
Life, death. Everything is very extreme. Polar, hierarchical, patriarchal, let me say as well. And really being, holding on to multiplicity. Think about it. That's countercultural right now. It's really going against the grain, going against almost my survival mechanism, my defaults. So I really, anyways, that's kind of my thought, but handing it over to you to...
Wow. Well, I'm just so honored to be with the two of you. I mean, especially right now, there's just so much love coming from the two of you. But more than that, it's a real will to connect with each other and with other people, which is what we need. I mean, more than anything. And that's really what I would leave people with is, If there's one thing that I want you to take away, everybody, and that I think you can take away, the simple thing that I hope you can take away is just to do your best to create a lifeline between you and your primary relationships. Just do your best and don't judge yourself, but try to find that will that you have, we all have, to be seen and to see and connect and to use this incredible couple as an example, because there really is, I mean, there's so much bravery there. I mean, I think you're a great example of the confidence, right? And the strength, the resiliency comes from, again, that willingness to look at yourself and to be exposed. I think that's so significant. And if we can make, just be willing to do that in order to be connected, invite seeing and being seen, hearing and being heard, just do our best, I think.
Yeah.
So, Mark, for anyone who's listening now or later, and we want more of you, how do we reach you, books?
Yeah, how do people stay in touch? How can people?
My website, Mark O'Connell Therapist. I guess I'm on the socials. I'm not a kid, so I don't talk about it in the most cool and accessible way, but I what am I on? Instagram?
Yeah,
and LinkedIn.
Yeah, you're there.
And we'll put all the links.
You're there.
We'll put all of that
there. Yeah.
Be sent. Yeah. So that's how to reach Mark. We offer couples therapy. You want to say something? You work with women. I work with men separately.
Yeah, but I'm just basking.
Just basking in Mark. And we want to thank everyone for coming and joining. This is the first out of many series, and we hope to do it more often. And we want to thank all of everyone.
Yeah,
coming.
Thanks. To everybody who joined, and thank you again, Mark, for your generosity and your your incredible toolkit.
And may everyone reach multiplicity with themselves and with their lovers. And we'll wish everyone goodbye and good night. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye.